Technorama, episode 519, Space Cats.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I'm not sure what to say here. Where can I find more phrases to feed you?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, hey, thank you. We appreciate it. Hope you have a good time. If you are returning, welcome back. You know the drill. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I still feel a little stuffed.
A little stuffed, like turkey?
Yeah, from last week.
Go out for a walk.
I need a long walk.
Short pier.
Yeah. But no, I'm good, man.
You had a good holiday? Was it productive?
No, actually, a good holiday is non-productive, where you don't really have to do anything.
Well, I mean, did you catch up on any Netflix or anything?
I started watching The Punisher.
I'm just about done. I think I got two or three left.
Yeah.
Very enjoyable.
I'm not binging it as fast as some things, so... No. Yeah, the first, I'm probably around episode 3, I think. Yeah, it's pretty good.
I wish you could download it, because I'm going on all these business trips and I can't take that one with me. Like,
you can.
Doggone it. No, not every series can be downloaded. Not every movie can be downloaded to the mobile. Uh-uh, I checked.
That's funny, because I thought most of the original stuff you could,
You could do. Drives me nuts. It's always the ones I want.
Yeah, right. I would check it again before you go, but yeah.
I just checked it tonight.
When are you leaving? When are you leaving?
Tuesday morning.
Oh, so you guys still got time.
Yeah. Oh, they'll change the whole series in 2 days.
They might. You never know.
No, it ain't happening. They have their rules, and I have yet to figure out what they are. Anyway... My vacation wasn't so... My Black Friday was truly black because my Mac Mini that drives the video on this podcast and streams to Facebook Live didn't really go all that well. I was doing an upgrade to High Sierra and it went...
Oh, boy.
So I had to do the recovery boot and copy everything off to an external hard drive. Fortunately, in the end, I didn't need that. But
right.
Because it says... Run first aid. I ran first aid. Didn't work. Then I said, well, if I'm going to reload, then I'm going to back up first. So I dropped to a command line and backed everything up, which took a few hours because years and years and years worth of photos and whatnot that I didn't want to lose.
All right.
I got my backup and I said, all right, let's go and install High Sierra from this recovery partition to the actual drive. I did that, brought it up, entered my iCloud credentials, and hey, everything appears to still be there. Now, I did do some... initial tests, and it looked okay, but for whatever reason, there's something going on between desktop presenter. See, Craig comes in on Skype, and I capture a region of the screen on my iMac and send it over to the Mac Mini, which is running Wirecast, which does the broadcasting. Right. Mm-hmm. It didn't want to do that. It gets like one frame every 2 minutes. It's not exactly, broadcast quality there.
More like a slideshow.
Oh, worse. Yeah. So we're just winging it tonight, and we're going to go back to the old way we did this back in 2005, 6, yeah. Whatever it was.
Right.
Before we even attempted video. And every once in a while, you just got to...
Before email, there was one podcast. It was audio only.
Smoke signals and carrier pigeons tonight, folks. All right, then let's get out of it, because we have a ton of stuff to cover, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Let's do the history thing, since we didn't get any feedback. On this day in history for November 29th, 2017, this is the 333-day... 333 day in the Gregorian calendar. There are 32 days remaining in 2017. It was on this date in 1877 that Thomas Edison demonstrates his phonograph,
Mary Had a Little Lamb,
for the first time.
That was actual audio off of the drum. On November 29th, 1929, U.S. Admiral Richard E. Byrd leads the first expedition to fly over the South Pole.
Get it? Byrd, fly over the South Pole.
Yes, I did.
November 29th, 1961, Enos, a chimpanzee, is launched into space. The spacecraft orbits the Earth twice and splashes down off the coast of Puerto Rico as part of the Mercury Atlas V mission.
Roscoe's still looking for him. And 45 years ago today, Atari announces the release of Pong, the first commercially successful video game.
Don't do another Roscoe impersonation, otherwise they're going to start calling us the Dukes of Haphazard.
Those Duke boys.
Happy birthday goes on this day to American philosopher and academic Amos Bronson Alcott, born on this date in 1799.
And Australian mathematician and physicist Christian Doppler was born 214 years ago today.
I think you meant Austrian, but that's okay. Is he the Doppler from the Doppler effect?
I wondered. Could be. Yeah. Christian Doppler. Right.
Scottish Canadian journalist and politician, 10th premier of the West Canada. Why did I put a politician in here?
I don't know.
I don't know. You know what? I was doing a demo. I was doing a demo on one of our developer meetups for work. I must have hit that one by mistake.
Okay, keep going. Read that one.
John Ambrose Fleming, the English physicist and engineer, was born 168 years ago today.
An American mathematician and academic, Suzanne Rose Benedict, was born on this date in 1873.
Born November 29th, 1920, American chemist and academic, the man who developed spandex, God bless him. Right. Joseph Shivers, what an appropriate name. Because that's what happened every time I see spandex. Ooh. Yeah.
Also turning 97 today is Russian engineer and politician. Another politician? Well, he's an engineer, I guess. Yegor Logachev. Ligachev?
Ligachev. Come on.
Ligachev. Whatever. Actually, it would have been better if I spell checked it. It's easier to read.
It says something like leg up.
Yeah, Ligachev. Ligachev.
Yeah, that's better. American horn player and composer Chuck Mangione. I think he's in the background on this song somewhere. He's 77 today.
And American comedian, actor, screenwriter Gary Shandling was born on 68 years ago today.
He passed away a couple years ago, didn't he?
He did.
All right. We have a few listener birthdays in December. December 1st. Is Claudio Miranda, longtime listener and patron of the show. Thank you very much, Claudio. And Ben Frixell from the Mac Mania podcast. We should really check if that exists still. He was born on December 2nd. So if you want to get on the calendar, then go on over to chuckchat.com/wiki. See, I don't have my video assistant in here tonight, so I can't just glance at the screen and cheat. Actually, got to remember these things. Whew, this is hard. How did we do this before video?
Podcasting's hard. I know, right?
Go over there and we'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. That's the way it was on this date in history for November 29th, 2017. Play a little more of that lovely music. Okay. You remember last year when I did the song My Nerdiest Things?
Yes.
Well, I am making a couple tweaks to that, and I found that's the other thing I did Friday. Turkey Day? I forgot what day it was. I think it was Thursday. I found a whole bunch of pictures, and I put together a video for it, so I'll have that uploaded soon.
Oh, okay.
So I'll have my friends on Facebook and Snapchat and Twitter, photos on Instagram, cross-post to Flickr, new shows on Netflix released.
Remember when we did the 12 Days of Christmas?
Yeah, and a Zune. That's probably still hanging around somewhere.
It is. Oh, I found it.
Oh, boy. We'll play that closer to the holidays, folks. Trust us.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking of.
Yes.
Because I'm still kind of proud of our projects. But some of the Christmas stuff we did for in our fit days with our fit
Lucky
crew.
Lucky no!
I was thinking of reposting some of those Christmas ones this year because one of our listeners
could do that because we're going to have a couple of weeks off.
Well, one of our listeners wanted to repost our Halloween specials. I was like, sure, why not? And I started thinking, you know, we worked pretty hard on those, some of those holiday specials to not at least have them posted somewhere semi-officially. So I want to have them somewhere.
I'm put them on the Technorama page and just have a specials menu option.
Yeah, the only problem is to give credit to everybody, it's like takes forever. I may have to revise the post a few times, but I am going to repost them though.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, yeah. Especially because you can't link to the sites that were there because the audio credits say, you know, George Starcher and Kevin Devon from In the Trenches. Find them at inthetrenches.com.
I know. Yeah. Let's see. What is inthetrenches.com now?
Oh, probably a ditch witch.
It's a park domain. It's a park domain.
More like in the ditches. Someone's working on a prisoner inmate program, which is pretty much what it was before.
Yeah. They should start their podcast up and call it In the Ditches.
All right. Let me see if I can pull this up without playing the auto ads. I apologize. There are a lot of embedded ads in this week's articles. It's driving me nuts because I was trying to proofread some of this stuff.
You need ad block. Okay. Actually, I use uBlock
Origin. We close this because I don't want to sign up. And then we scroll down again. And yeah, see, now where
the very first RWT made, I would imagine.
I don't even know where this is playing from. Yes.
Scroll down.
So. What? I can't pause anything. Sure. Oh.
The first video is like a.
It's like halfway down the page. Yeah, I know. It's annoying.
The internet is getting ridiculous on some sites. It's like, okay, I kind of read half of it, and all of a sudden a pop-up goes, hey, why don't you put your email address here and we'll keep you informed. I'm like, no. Websites that want to allow notifications, I'm like, no, especially no.
All right, let's keep going here.
Impending news, everyone.
Yeah, this is impending news.
Yes.
If the supervolcano underneath Yellowstone erupts again, we may have far less advanced warning time than we thought. After analyzing the minerals, and fossilized ash from the most recent mega eruption, researchers at Arizona State University, since it's local, think the supervolcano last woke up after two influxes of fresh magma flowed into the reservoir below the caldera. In an unsettling twist, the minerals revealed that the critical changes in temperature and composition built up in a matter of decades. Until now, geologists had thought it would take centuries for the supervolcano to make that transition. Ah, 2013.
Well, some volcanoes, like those in Hawaii,
now shut
break
up.
Through a thin point in the crust called a hotspot.
I accidentally looked at the second video in the article.
Don't look at it. Don't make eye contact.
We don't need to read anything. We can just play their videos. See how that goes. A 2013 study, for instance, showed that the magma reservoir that feeds the supervolcano is about 2.5 times larger than previous estimates. Scientists also think the reservoir is drained after every monster blast, so they thought it should take a long time to refill based on the new study. It seems magma can rapidly refresh, making the volcano potentially explosive in a geologic blink of an eye. Quote, it's shocking how little time is required to take a volcanic system from being quiet and sitting there on the edge of an eruption, study co-author Hannah Shamlou told the New York Times. Still, Yellowstone is one of the best monitored volcanoes in the world, notes Michael Poland, the current scientist in charge of the Yellowstone Volcano Observatory for the USGS. A variety of sensors and satellites are always looking for changes, and right now the supervolcano does not seem to pose a threat. We see interesting things all the time, but we haven't seen anything that would lead us to believe that the sort of magmatic event described by the researchers is happening, says Poland via email, adding that the research overall is, quote, somewhat preliminary, but quite tantalizing. Now, I did hear that in recent decades, the chamber is filling, and they can tell that because the land is tilting. If you look at the Yellowstone Lake.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's the north end is tilting up and the south end is tilting down. So where there was kind of a forest on the south end of the lake is now flooded.
Right.
Because all the water's rushing that way. And on the north end, there's docks that aren't hitting the water anymore. So I didn't get a chance to look when we were there in 2000, I think was the last time I was there. I wanted to go this summer, but we didn't have an opportunity.
That's interesting, though. You know what scares me is they keep talking about the super volcano, how if it explodes, it would kill, be devastating to life.
Yeah. Yep.
Everybody.
Pretty much most of the U.S. would be kaput, and it would affect the climate around the world. It's a bad one.
Yeah, I mean...
But what can you do? You know, you can't live preparing for that.
No. I mean, I had no idea that it was that dangerous. I mean, it's a volcano.
No, I'm thinking a super volcano.
But wait a minute. What I'm saying is, when you think of a volcano, I think, okay, kind of locally... You know, as obviously a close proximity is a problem, but I never thought about, it can wipe out life out so far. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I had no idea that it was that bad.
Oh, you gotta study volcanology, man. It's fascinating. Well,
play the video
when it comes to that stuff. So the last one that, I believe it was every 200 million years, 200,000 years. But it's almost on a regular clock cycle, plus or minus, whatever. And the ash cloud that, it went kaboom. The ash cloud, they found ash in Kentucky and Tennessee. And it was Missouri. There were animals that were buried in ash mudslides. States away. I mean, it wasn't just, poof, and stuff like when Mount St. Helens went off. Everybody east of that had some nice sunsets, and Washington was obviously affected, and parts of northern Idaho and Montana, because the prevailing westerlies are going to carry the ash cloud that way. But this thing covered a lot. I mean, when you go 2,000 miles away and there's feet of ash on the ground.
Sure.
that's a big volcano, Craig.
No, I'm not saying I don't believe it. I just didn't realize that volcano could be that destructive. I just never read about a super volcano like that.
Mm-hmm. So. You're fun. All right.
Yeah. Hey, why don't we just send Spock down there with the cold fusion thing?
Hey, that'll work. All right.
Call it a day.
From Newsweek, which I believe is going to play another video as well. Oh, I muted it first. Hooray. Your turn. You read this one.
Okay. In another addition to the ever-expanding list of things robots can do better than humans, artificial intelligence has beaten one of NASA's world-class pilots in a drone race. The researchers at NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, California, revealed Tuesday the results of 2 years spent developing algorithms for autonomous drones using technology also used for the spacecraft navigation funded by Google. The space agency put its AI to the test on October 12th, finding that their robot was nimbler than and did not get tired like the human pilot, which that makes sense. The race held on October 12th pitted NASA drone pilot Ken Liu against custom-built drones named after comic book characters Batman, Joker, and Nightwing, capable of reaching speeds of up to 80 miles an hour. Wow. Over the course of the race, factors such as natural human aggression and fatigue gave the robots the advantage. We pitted our algorithms against a human who flies a lot more by feel, Rob Reed, the project's task manager, said. There was no said in there. I put it in there. You can actually see the AI flies the drone smoothly around the course, whereas the human pilots tend to accelerate aggressively, so their path is jerkier. And there is a video showing.
The interesting thing is it says the official lap times. On the official lap times, Liu was faster. He averaged 11.1 seconds compared to the drone at 13.9. So he's faster, but the drones were more consistent overall. Where lose times varied more, the AI was able to fly the same race every lap, which I would expect from a computer algorithm to be, you know, less variable.
Yeah, consistent. Right.
But
so,
but to say that they won, yeah, gosh dang it, stupid videos. I'm not even doing anything. I'm on one page. It's not playing anything. It's not, sorry. Anyway.
Welcome to Chuck Church.
Newsweek. Let's not get any articles from Newsweek anymore.
Okay. We'll blacklist them.
I wouldn't call this a clean victory yet.
No, but I think it's pretty enlightening. Well, it's kind of neat. It makes sense. Well, you know, you get somebody.
Yeah, it makes sense because they put the course into the drone ahead of time. It's like, you know, put some sensors on it and let it figure it out itself. That's a different situation.
The video I watched, they were talking about the cameras and stuff that they put on here. So I think it was trying to use the cameras. It didn't just put the course in there, did they?
They said they put the course in ahead of time.
Oh, well, then that's
cheating.
Yeah, that is cheating. So, well, then I think that gives the human pilot even more
credibility.
Yeah, more credibility, even more of a win, because if he was able to do it,
fake
and
news.
The robots already knows, then yeah.
Fake news.
Yeah, fake news.
I'm calling it fake news.
Exactly. Yeah, fake news.
Newsweek is just trying to pump up so they can get an AI story out this week.
It's clickbait.
You fell for it.
Yeah. Right.
All right. From Inc.com, this gets even better. We're going from Newsweek to Inc. What? These aren't our usual news sources, folks.
No, I thought I'd mix it up.
We're usually at places like Oddity Central and Bored Panda.
No, I think that's
Bored Podcaster.
Those are nicknames for Technorama.
nicknames for our listeners.
Bored Panda and Oddity Central. No. Okay. I thought I'd mix it up. These are some different places.
Last year, the World Economic Forum, the WEF, published its Future of Jobs report, forecasting the top 10 job skills required for workers to thrive by 2020, according to Global Chief Human Resources Officers. You know, it's a new title now. You got like CIOs are your chief IT officers and your CEOs and your, now you got CISOs, which are your chief information security officers.
Hey, I predict we're going to have a lot more acronyms.
They have CHROs now. I've also heard chief talent officers. Anyway, compared side by side with the skills identified as needed in 2015, the shifts we'll experience in 2020 aren't too dramatic, except for one skill. I'll let you guess which one that is as you scroll further. So the top skills in 2015 were, number one, complex problem solving. Number two, coordinating with others. Number three, people management. Then it goes on to critical thinking, negotiation, quality control, service orientation, judgment and decision making, active listening, and creativity. Now, here's what they predict in 2020, which is only a couple years away now.
Texting, paying attention to nobody but yourself.
Complex problem solving is still at the top. Then critical thinking, which was number four, has moved up to number two.
Mm-hmm.
Creativity, which went from 10 to a whopping number three. I feel like Casey Kasem here. Moving up seven spots, it's creativity.
And now a long distance to...
It only took 5 years to climb seven spots.
Yeah. It's finally here. Here is creativity.
People management falls from 3 to 4. Coordinating with others falls from 2 to 5. Emotional intelligence is now on the list. Came out of nowhere. Wasn't on the top 10 before. You know what emotional intelligence is?
It's reading your customer?
No, it's controlling yourself. So if somebody gives you, it's sort of like being professional.
Okay.
Instead of getting torqued off and I agree. It's an important part.
Okay.
I don't necessarily agree that these things shifted around. So anyway, number seven, judgment and decision making, which was number eight before, service orientation. Came onto the list.
Damn.
Number eight.
Yeah, it was seven.
Yes, it was. It was down one. Okay, I thought it was not on the list. Negotiation, which was 5, fell to 9, and cognitive flexibility, which wasn't on the list before. So a couple are missing.
Cognitive flexibility goes hand in hand with emotional intelligence.
They completely took active listening off the list. That's not to say it's not important, but it's just not one of the top 10.
11.
Quality control is gone. Huh. I'm not sure I buy this. I think there's a lot of questions behind this to say, A, what exactly are we looking for? Are we looking for a management position? Are we looking for a new programmer? Are we looking for a manufacturing quality engineer?
I would say it is a little vague.
It's very vague. Mm-hmm. So if you read into the article, it says, yes, creativity, which is even above emotional intelligence. Notice it made a big jump from number 10 spot all the way up to number 3. But what exactly is the application of creativity in the age of bots and automation? How do we use it? And what does it mean to be creative in 2020, which is just around the corner? Commentary on the report speculates that we will need to become more creative to keep up with the changes in new technologies and new ways of working. And thankfully, the truth still remains, robots cannot be as creative as humans. So my view on AI and machine learning and how it's going to help our jobs is take away a lot of the mundane parts of our jobs so that we can focus on being more innovative and creative.
Maybe it can reply to emails and join WebEx's force.
Artificially,
that'd be a start.
Can it fix the audio quality on WebEx's?
Yeah. Hey, why don't you connect to the WebEx and get it all straightened out before I join the meeting?
Speaking of emotional intelligence, did we just read this one? We just read this one. Okay, sorry. I was clicking the wrong thing. Is that our news? That's done. We're done with the news.
I think so. Hey, by the way, as a side, I've yet to be contacted by the talent coordinator. I don't know if that's a reflection on me or
what in our organization.
No, I'm just making a joke. You mentioned the talent coordinator, and I was like,
we just got to be chief talent officer. I'm curious to see what the program is.
Oh, I'm making a joke, man.
Yeah. It wasn't funny.
Maybe that's why I'm not contacted by the talent coordinator.
We're not looking for comedians, Craig. It's not what we're in the business of.
Yeah. But there's plenty around, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, let me mute my phone. My family's having a tech storm right now. Okay. Oh, we're going to take a quick break. No. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the Hacks and Strange Stories, some Remember When, and several other things. So hang on and hang out.
Hello, friends and neighbors. I'm your little podcast buddy, Dave Slusher. The Evil Genius Chronicles is the longest-running podcast on the internet, starting in August 2004 and continuing to this very day. It's a discussion of technology, culture, philosophy, comedy. Conversations may range from politics to comic books, from games to literature, but no matter where it leads, it's a lot of fun. There'll be songs, some interviews now and then. It's a weekly dose of audio joy, except during the dog days of podcasting, when it is a daily dose of audio joy. That's a good 80 episodes a year. And you can join the frivolity at evilgeniuschronicles.org. See you there. Excelsior!
Hi, this is Erin Gray, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
Technorama, the turducken of podcasting.
Gotta play that holiday thing from Michael every holiday.
The turducken of podcasting.
Yeah, that's right. That's funny.
Speaking of coworkers, there's Dave.
Yeah.
Who would have thought? Just bring a few years ago, who would have thought? Oh, and speaking of dog days, well, I'm going to call an audible because this is at the end of the show, but go ahead. Tell them what's coming up in December.
Yeah, we're going to do the dog days of Advent, which we'll be podcasting for, 23 days? So 22-23 days and starting December 3rd. So if you go to dogdaysofpodcasting.com, you'll be able to find all the links to all that stuff. And actually, I just thought about this. I don't have the subscribe link up just yet. So it will be it'll be up shortly, because actually I don't have anybody signed up yet. So dogdaysofpodcasting.com, go there. You'll get a nice Christmas dose of podcasting for your podcatcher. How about that? Yeah, there you go. Perfect. I was like, yeah, that's it. That captures the essence right there.
I couldn't resist.
Yeah. Anyway, Dog Days of Podcasting. I 23 days on there. Oh, because I extended it to the 25th. I figured that if you're podcasting that far, it might be nice. Everybody might have a nice note to end on the.
Are we going to be Christmas. Able to start on the first? Because that's when I plan to start my advent calendar.
We can. I'm a purist.
There's 25 days on my advent calendar. You know, you open the little door and it gives you a phrase. Or did you watch Bad Santa where the kid gets a chocolate?
Well,
seen Bad Santa, Craig?
Which one?
The first one with Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. And the kid opens it up and there's a candy corn in there.
Yeah.
Cough drop.
That's right. Yeah, that's Bad Santa, all right.
That's a new holiday tradition, thanks to my daughter, Lisa. Bad Santa, and now Bad Santa 2. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Start your kids off right. All right, we have a Hacks and Strange Stories in here somewhere. Where is it?
Hacks and Strange Stories?
Lenny didn't sound too sure that time.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, if you go to dogdaysofpodcasting.com, the dog on there is actually a real dog. It's my parents' dog. He's no longer with us, but I just love that picture because he looks so thrilled to be wearing this Christmas stuff. So Rufus, poor kid, poor dog.
Another news source from Smithsonian.com. You want to guide us through this one?
Sure. And this is about Nikola Tesla. It's actually an article about the rise and fall of Nikola Tesla and his tower. And the tower was what he was building for wireless transmissions. He was trying to make a wireless world, and that was part of it. But there's a whole article here talking about his relationship with
George Westinghouse, Edison. Thomas Edison.
Yeah, Edison and Westinghouse. And it's really interesting, but the reason I found this article, I found it off of on Reddit, because people will post on Reddit, some people will say, "Today I learned," and then whatever they learned. And one of the things was that today I learned was that Westinghouse was at the point of bankruptcy and he was trying to stay in business. And he asked Nikola Tesla to forego some of the royalty payments that they owed him. And they owed him a lot already at one point. And he basically came back and says, "You know what? I'm not interested in making money. I'm interested more in making a mark of mankind." And he tore up the contract. So
he was an open source guy.
Yeah, I guess pretty much. Well, I mean, he had plenty of other patents on other things, everything from the AC motors to, all kinds of stuff. So anyway, he basically let them have at it. And I think because George Westinghouse was so upfront and open with him. So when it came time, he was like, "Hey, I got a problem. I can't make these payments." They already owed him money to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And he just forgave it all, which I think was kind of neat. So anyway, the whole article talks about the whole relationship between them and what some of Nikola Tesla's ultimate goals were. And it was a fun read, and it's a long read. So sit down and enjoy it.
Okay. Thank you. through the show notes, chuckdat.com/technorama. Find the show notes, click through those. You find the rise and fall of Nikola Tesla. This is the part of the show where I normally give a shout out to the people in the chat room who are doing live as we broadcast on YouTube or Facebook. But unfortunately, we had some technical issues this week. So let's just make up some names. I know John Miller Jr. would be there. Scott Tyler. Tim Elliott.
Yeah, Tim Elliott. I don't know, let's just go through Facebook and just list all the people that like TechNoRama.
Thank you very much. When we are there, we appreciate it. All right. Into the remember when. See, if we remembered your name, it means you've been there too much.
You know.
Like, yeah. Cheers. Where are we? Remember when? There it is.
Yes.
Been a while since we've had a remember when segment.
Hey.
Why is this in remember
when, we don't remember
when,
very
by
often.
The way? Yeah, we can't remember anything anymore at our age. A spacecraft graveyard exists in the middle of the ocean. Here's what's down there. Large satellites, space stations, and other objects can pose a threat when they fall to ground. As a result, many... Why is this a bulleted list? As a result, many nations de-orbit old spacecraft over the most remote place on Earth called Point Nemo.
They found him.
Yeah, and then they crushed him with a satellite.
Hey, there's Nemo.
Spacecraft... That's why he only has 1.5 fins. The spacecraft cemetery is about 1,450 miles away from any piece of land and home to hundreds of dead satellites. Dead satellites aren't much fun.
Great band name.
Space agency... Dead satellites. It's like it's like the Georgia satellites after they weren't playing anymore.
Oh. Now,
space agencies and companies are concerned about space junk and working on ways to prevent its formation and clean it up. The most remote location on Earth has many names. It's called Point Nemo, Latin for no one. And the Oceanic Pole of Inaccessibility. Ooh, that sounds like a good band name. Or a place on your D&D game.
Hey, after a couple of beers, you're the people watching the band. Oceanic, what?
Send him to the Oceanic Pole of Inaccessibility.
Yeah, sounds like some Odin would send Loki to.
Right. Most precisely, its exact coordinates are 48 degrees, 52.6 minutes south latitude and 123 degrees, 23.6 minutes west longitude. The spot is about 1,450 nautical miles from any spot of land and the perfect place to dump dead or dying spacecraft. Come on down. We got a place for you to dump your spacecraft, which is why it's home to what NASA calls its spacecraft cemetery. It's in the Pacific Ocean, and it's pretty much the farthest place from the human civilization as you can find, NASA said. Bill Aylor, an aerospace engineer with the Atmospheric Reentry Specialist, put it another way, quote, "It's a great place you can put things down without hitting anything."
Well said.
You can swing a dead cat without hitting a satellite. No.
Right.
To, quote, "bury something in a cemetery, space agencies have to time a crash over that spot. Smaller satellites don't generally end up at Point Nemo since, as NASA explains, the heat of the friction of the air burns up the satellite as it falls towards the Earth at thousands of miles per hour. Ta-da! No more satellite. The problem is larger objects like Chang'e 1, the Chinese space station, which launched in September 2011 and weighs, about 8.5 tons.
Hey, isn't that the one that they fictionally talked about in Gravity?
I thought this was one that, no, I can't remember. Now there was one that they,
yeah,
I don't think it was fictional. There was a Chinese satellite that they blew up and all the pieces went kaplooey. No, and that might be what Gravity was based on.
No. I mean, I thought that was the space station they were trying to get to.
Oh.
You know, like, oh, we can save ourselves.
Oh,
you know,
yes, by going to the Chinese space station. Well, not so much anymore.
I say fictional because, yes, it's a real thing, but it's not. I don't think it was realistic to even try and do that in a real setting. You know, hey, there's a space station over there. Let's go over to it. Like, got a million of them floating around.
Well, there could be.
Yeah.
There could be. All right. So if you want to read more about what ends up in that junkyard, it's probably really spread out and there's not much to look at by the time it gets all burned by the atmosphere and everything's all broken, busted and burned. And then it falls into the ocean and hits and smashes up and then it sinks. And they're probably not all in one nice cluster where you can just take a submersible down and go, oh, look over there and just right next, you know, to
I just I just imagine there's like a pile of old satellites, and every once in a while here comes another one, you know, just land, just softly lands on floating the pile. You know. Yeah. But look, if you scroll down in that article, and I've seen this picture before, and I know you have too, of all of, you know, it's a visualization of all of what satellites around Earth. That is a scary picture.
Well, it's also a bit exaggerated too, because the size of the dots are like the size of a city. Now, they're at different altitudes, they're in different orbits, and they're spread out. I mean, have you ever looked up at the night sky? How often do you see stuff going by? Now, granted, well, some of these are geosynchronous, so you're not going to see them move at all.
You can't. Yeah, right. But you can. There's apps that'll, you know, point out.
Oh, I know.
Things it'll point out things other than the International Space Station. So
there's a lot of junk up there. There's like rocket stages just floating around.
Right below the picture, it says that some 4,000 satellites currently orbit Earth in various altitudes. There's space for more, even the 4,425 new internet providing satellites that Elon Musk and SpaceX wish to launch in the near future. 4,000. That's a lot. But I don't know. I you look at that picture and you go, well, how do we even leave Earth? And I think that's also a big problem. Well, seriously, that's a problem. You know, trying to get, you know, astronauts out of orbit without smacking into something.
It's not the satellites you got to worry about, because they know where all the satellites are. It's the pieces and parts. It's the
right. Well, bolts, that's what I mean. Just
nuts and bolts that are cruising around at thousands of miles a second. They'll poke a hole in your solar array and render your satellite useless.
Yeah. Well, we saw a video. Harrison and Kim and myself. I think it was maybe Discovery Place, and. Yeah, they had a visual representation, which if you scroll down a little bit further in the article, there's an animated GIF. And they were talking about how one satellite that maybe gets damaged and some pieces fly, then that can be catastrophic, because that can lead to more, because you get all these pieces that are not under control and just kind of going wherever they want. And they go, oh, here's another satellite, you know, and runs into that, which is, I think, pretty much what happened in the movie Gravity. But
we're going to do space junk collector soon.
Yeah. And that they actually had some proposals, you know, I'm sure these weren't official presentations that they showed us in the video, but of machines with netting and all kinds of stuff to try and capture all of the junk. And cause there is some junk just floating around up there, you know, lost satellites and, you know, I don't know.
Sounds like a fun time. Sounds like a future business.
It's hard to believe that we've had enough time on this Earth to put 4,000 satellites up in space, isn't it?
60.
I just said it seems.
I mean, Sputnik was up there in the late 50s. So, 60, 70 years. There's been a lot of stuff.
When you and I were off learning, dating, living, they were launching satellites.
Still are.
Well, at least one half of that equation we still are.
We were launching rockets and exploratory missions as well. And if you go back to the late 70s when we were thinking about launching Voyager 1, here's what we had to say about it when it launched 40 years ago. Wow, that seems like yesterday.
See? Seems like we haven't had that much time.
The longest space flight possible, 12-year reconnaissance of the outer solar system, is about to begin. It's called Voyager. The name is appropriate. This voyage will take two spacecraft on a journey already being called a training period for interstellar missions. Before they leave our solar system behind, these Voyagers will have trained their eyes and ears on enough planets and moons to force astronomers to rewrite their texts. Until a few months ago, Voyager was called Mariner Jupiter Saturn. What? But Mariners are a different class of spacecraft designed for flights to the inner planets. The name was changed. Both Mariner and Voyager come from the design boards and fabrication facilities at the JPL in Pasadena, California. In late August and early September, the launches are scheduled 12 days apart. The Voyagers embark for regions where even the best Earth-based telescopes provide only fuzzy cues as to what's really out there. I forgot they were launched so close together because they arrived at their destinations, you know, sometimes years apart.
Yes, I think they obviously went on different trips. So, yes, you're right. I think one got to interstellar space before the other.
An artist rendering. I wish that we had the video stream here because these pictures are wonderful. An artist rendering a Voyager spacecraft flying past Jupiter, Saturn, and their respective moons.
And we should have sent two more satellites to go with them so we can get selfies.
What? Don't they have a selfie stick on them?
I think they do.
James E. Long, a slender engineer and paleontologist who had run and finished his first Boston Marathon just a week before, tapped the small Voyager model lightly. I don't consider this a two-planet mission, he explained. It's really a 12-planet mission, even if we don't go to Uranus. Long is science manager on the JPL Voyager team. As he cheerfully admits, the option of sending Voyager onto Uranus and perhaps even Neptune became suddenly more attractive last spring when Cornell astronomers discovered that Uranus, like Saturn, has rings. Dun, 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 dun. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
We just discovered that in our lifetimes.
That is funny.
I remember
when
they said, and Jupiter has rings, and Uranus has rings, and Neptune has rings. Like, wow. I mean, that's as big as finding exoplanets was 20 years ago. And look at this one has planets, and that one has planets, and that one has planets.
I do remember reading about that. Yeah. Everybody has rings. Yeah.
These are the kind of stories
Oprah
that got me
giving out rings to planets.
Yeah. These are the kind of stories that really got me hooked on astronomy and space science.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I was... If computers hadn't come along, this is a serious career track that I was considering ever since I was like 10 years old.
I never really thought of it as a career, as more like a hobby. I mean, something I was deeply interested in. And I guess if somebody suggested the possibility, yeah, I could probably see that. I mean, it would have been fun.
I knew it was going to be something science related because it was either going to be dinosaurs or astronomy.
And look where you're at now.
Still science related. Yeah, I'm stuck doing this podcast. Kids, stay in school, drink your orange juice, and eat your alphabet soup.
Yeah, see, you could be a podcaster one day.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
I'll tell you what really ignited my imagination for for planets. You know, astronomy was the space shuttle. Because seeing the pictures before it launched and then, of course, being around.
Oh, when the Enterprise was riding on the back of the 747 and they did that test landing. Yeah. That was cool.
That in itself was like, oh, cool, you know. And there was a little uproar about it. One, it wasn't named Enterprise to begin with. I don't remember that as much as seeing it do its thing. And then seeing being around when the shuttle actually took off and then returned back in from space.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing. And I've talked about this before, you know, I kept this notebook. It was like it was project worthy, something you would turn in, but nobody said, hey, Craig, go do this. I just started keeping a notebook of newspaper clippings and I was drawing planets and, you know, I had the phases, not the phases, but the cycle, the shuttle goes off when it goes to do its reentry. I had it taking off from the Earth and then flipping back over and coming, you know, I drew that on the cover, flipping over. So the panels were facing the Earth, that kind of thing. And I loved it. It really struck a chord with me that, you know, there's something a little bit bigger.
Sorry, Craig, you're not JPL material.
I'm still waiting on their talent coordinator to call me.
Turned in his notebook.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, somebody stole my notebook. That's the bad thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The reason you're not working at JPL is someone stole your notebook.
No. I mean, I did all that work. I mean, I had all that stuff. It's one of those things that, there's a few things. I got a couple of things that I've kept from a kid. I got a drawing book, you know, as a big art book that I've drawn in. I've drawn in over the years. I haven't drawn anything new in it.
You hadn't drawn in it?
Drawn it. I had a drone in it. I was ahead of my time. No, so I haven't drawn in it for many years because I was like, you know, the book's closed to me at this point. But it's all drawings I've had. And some of it has NASA and all kinds of stuff. And anyway, it's a lot of cartoons and things I drew. I drew in there when I was probably like 12 to 14 time frame, I'm taking a guess. So anyway, that's the kind of thing I would have kept. That notebook is what I'm saying. That'd have been one of the things that I would have kept, you know, in my life, but somebody stole it. Jerk.
I think you'd lost it.
Hey, somebody probably turned it in and got an A for it.
Let's give a shout out to our patrons on something a little more cheerful, shall we?
Hey, by the way, for the record.
Yes.
I remember exactly where it was when it left my possession.
Uh-huh. I Go left today. It right on the table.
No, it wasn't in
the mind
his room.
Of an 8-year-old is a steel trap.
I know exactly. I can, in my mind's eye, I can go there right now. I know where I left it.
Uh-huh. I have a number of things like that. And they aren't there, are they?
That bag of cash. It's not
there. That winning lottery ticket. Thank you to our patrons. They are our winning lottery ticket. This show is brought to you by our patrons. They help offset the costs of running this show because there's hosting and there's software and there's all kinds of fun stuff. Thank you to Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Leon, John Noble, Amy Bowen, Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Kyle Nishioka, and Yorga Shrawan, another avid astro enthusiast. That's a new word. I just made it up.
Yeah, very nice.
You want to be part of this group, this elite group who gets special content every time we do a show, we sit down and record two. We do this one, and then we follow it up right afterwards with a special show just for the patrons. And they get that, and you don't. So if you want to get that, go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. And as far as little as a dollar. And you only pay when we create content. That's the cool part. Because like over the holidays, we're going to take some time off. You don't pay for that. And that's the good part. But when we do produce content, it's a nice way of saying, hey, you know, when you pass the guitar playing guy in the subway and you throw a dollar in his guitar case, think of us that way.
Our hat's open.
Our hat is in our hands.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you very much. And then we get to shout your name out when we play this cool music that I don't know where I got it from, but it's distorted enough that we can't get copyright in
suit. We own it now.
Yeah, pretty much. Just like Happy Go Lively, but just don't tell YouTube.
Yeah, no
All
kidding.
Right, we'll cut that out. Thank you very much. And we go on to the media corner. We have some good news. I almost feel like playing the good news, everyone. But we'll do the media
Good news, everyone.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
Ah, Blockbuster.
What? Blockbuster?
That's where I recorded the Blockbuster video. Oh, that's where I recorded that audio clip that you hear in the background.
Yeah.
Someone walks in the door and I'm just holding up, I think it was my iRiver at the time.
Yeah. Excuse me, can I record this? Sure.
They never asked.
Oh, well, yeah, you got permission.
I have lots of little background things like that from you know, crowded restaurants or barnyard animals. It's just every once in a while I need some random background noise.
All those farm animals you had in Wisconsin.
From the Nerdist, I have to make this font a little larger. I can't read this too small. There's at least one thing to be thankful for this Turkey Day that doesn't even count eating metric ton of potatoes and bread products. Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return, otherwise known as the revived version of Mystery Science Theater 3000, made possible by crowdfunding that launched on Netflix, has been renewed by the streaming service giant for a second/12th season. I love that.
Nice.
That means more of Jonah Heston, Crow T Robot, Tom Servo, Gypsy, King of Forrester, TV's Son of TV's Frank, and every other weird and wacky character from Moon 13, the Moon. The announcement was made at the end of MST3K's 2017 Turkey Day Marathon on Shout Factory by creator Joel Hodgson, and a new series star, Jonah, and the new series star, Jonah Ray and Felicia Day. Hey, that rhymes. Mm-hmm. So I had seen the announcement and curious to see what the write-ups are about. It seemed a gargantuan, unfathomable prospect for MST3K to come back after an absence of 18 years, followed by cancellation in 1999 after 197 episodes on Comedy Central and Syfy, the sci-fi channel.
No, Syfy.
But return it did, thanks entirely to a majorly successful Kickstarter campaign in 2016. The campaign raised so much money, the team was able to make 14 new episodes, which were eventually picked up by Netflix for distribution. That was followed by a nationwide Watch Out for Snakes live tour.
Right.
There and was actually, some worry that Netflix might not pick up the series despite receiving 100% positive reviews on Rotten Tomatoes and almost uniformly good fan reaction, because unlike most Netflix original series, it's not super easy to binge a season of Mystery Science Theater. No, it's not. One, maybe two at a time, if you're lucky.
Yeah, it's hard. Actually, Harrison and I made it a point to stretch them out a little bit.
Yep.
Because, you know, it's like anything I've tried to binge watch, after a while, you kind of either get really deep in thought of what's going on.
Yeah.
But MST3K, there's jokes and stuff, and it's like, you have to kind of spread them out a little bit.
You want to savor it like a fine wine.
Sure. Actually,
you know what's funny is, what was it? Like 2 weeks ago, I just asked Grant Pachalko, hey, any news on the next season of MST3K? And he said, not that I've heard. And what do we get 2 weeks later? Ding.
Well, I can tell you in my mind, I knew that they were going to announce it at the end of the Turkey Day. I thought that's got to be the perfect time they're going to do it. And actually, Harrison and I were watching the last one, and I was like, you know what? It was getting about be almost 9 o'clock, and I was like, let's go get something to eat. Let's go ahead and eat before it gets too late. And we went downstairs and ate, and I totally missed it till the next morning. Went, oh crap!
I mean, what's the difference though? If you were sitting there watching it live,
No. Actually, it was kind of I've been wanting to know like everybody else. So I was like, oh, I totally missed that. But I knew that there were the process was taking a long time. And I'm trying to remember if Grant mentioned this or not. But before they actually renewed it, they were trying to get the line up all the rights for the movies they want to do.
Yeah.
In the new season. So it takes a long time, and that's the process that they were going through. So when it came up to Turkey Day, I was thinking, oh, that's probably going to be when they announce it, because that had been a long time. And of course,
Was
it Joel? Maybe Joel was talking about it at the live show, because we watched both live shows, and I think he may have brought it up. But anyway, that was the deal. He said it's signs are pointing to yes, but
sure,
we're still waiting. And so I wasn't too worried about it. But after a while, I was like, it's taking a little while to get there. But anyway.
Alrighty, that's our news, and we're sticking to it. We already talked to you about the dog days of podcasting, dog days of Advent. If you want to get involved, this is a good chance to start a podcast or the challenge to listen to all these podcasts. But we've got a number of people that launch podcasts out of the dog days of podcasting. Go over to dogdaysofpodcasting.com or reach out to Craig and let him know you're there. We are at an hour now, Craig. I say we take your discussion about the Justice League and we move to the Patreon show. There's a teaser for you, people.
Fine. Let's do that.
Yeah, I think we're going to end up doing more movie reviews on that thing. It's like, hey, good content. So as we close out this show, we want to know, here's our question of the week. If you lost all your memory, which TV show or movie would you rewatch? Is that plural or singular? Is that what's at the top of your list? What are you looking for there, buddy?
What am I looking for?
Yeah.
If I lost all my memory, which TV show or movie would I rewatch?
Can they put in multiple shows?
I was thinking Sesame Street. It's start learning your alphabet again. I don't know. It can be whatever. And yeah, multiple shows, it doesn't matter. Just what would you rewatch if you lost all your memory? Just what would Back to the Future?
How would you know what's good though? I mean, you rely on your memory to say, "Oh, I love Back to the Future, so let's rewatch that." But if you don't know what to start with, you could wind up watching, the Colbys from, the Dallas spinoff show from the 80s.
If you lost most of your memory, how about that?
Because your friends are going to tell you what you liked before. This is a tricky question. Let's leave this open to interpretation and see what people come back with.
Yes, I agree. Let's do that.
All right. You can find us on the web at chuckchat.com/technorama. That's where this show lives, and you'll find a whole bunch of contact information there. Like, if you want to get in touch with us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. We want to hear what you think of this interesting question and what your answer might be.
Or anything else.
Right. If we made a mistake or you've got comments on Voyager 1 or MST3K, let us know. 707-530-CHAT. Also, send us email, technorama@chuckchat.com. All the usual places. There's a Facebook group for Technorama Podcast. There's a Twitter. There's all the usual things. And don't forget, we still need more patrons to keep this show going. All right. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama and watch the head explode. Until then, Craig, give me a binary high five.
101. Hey. Your head exploding. Will you get a mop? Clean this up.